Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. For more information about the news and links we talk about on the show, go to our website at geeksone.com.
Welcome back, my geeklings.
Yes, it's
How
us.
How was your geek week?
How was your geek week?
How was your geek week?
Whatever.
How
was your geek week?
I had a lovely geek week, Aaron. Thank you for having me.
You had a lovely geek week?
I have a geek week.
What did you do on your geek week?
I actually did very little. I've been working nonstop at the Dream Factory where I work. And while I can't discuss what game I'm working on right now, I promise hours and hours and hours and days and weeks and years of fun for some of you out there.
Will it be
when
cool?
When our product's released.
Sims 3?
It has the potential to be.
Yeah. Oh, no. Wait. Fighting game?
No, not a fighting game.
When are they going to put you on a fighting game?
I know. I keep telling them that. But I think they're bitter because I've beaten up almost everyone where I work. There's like two guys where I work who I can't.
Literally?
Shut up.
Okay.
Soul Calibur.
Oh, God, right. Right, that's your number three, right?
No, I'm ranked number four where I work right now. But I tied for number four, so technically I'm number three with him.
See, they don't do this.
What were your geek weeks like?
My geek week was all about acting. It was headshots and meeting people and going down. Pete and I tried to go option a script and craziness.
Option the rights to a story.
Option the rights to a story.
We want to write
it
as a script.
English
we went
hard.
Down. You know, to San Diego. We almost went down to Mexico.
You went all the way down to San Diego?
Yes. Oh, my God. That five-hour trip. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Well, it should be a two-hour trip, but with the traffic out here, it's insane. 5 hours on the road.
That's crazy. You were crossing the border.
We were going to go across the border, but we wound up not needing to.
Yes.
They found a Taco Bell. There was no need. Yeah,
exactly.
I played some video games, which I haven't done in a while. Got back onto a couple games.
Have you been playing your World of Warcraft like a good little boy?
Well, I'm going to talk about that later, because we are going to talk about video games later on this episode, and I have a story about that.
You are the Leroy Jenkins guy, aren't you?
Yes.
Exactly. Oh, my God.
What is this?
Run!
Oh, Leroy, right.
Leroy Jenkins!
Well,
Leroy.
Real quickly, my name is Aaron Hendricks. I'm a filmmaker and designer here in Los Angeles, and I'm a geek.
I am Matt King. I'm an actor here in Los Angeles. We're changing it up this week, and I am a geek.
I am Donald Marshall. I am a video game professional and a writer here in Hollywood. Not Los Angeles. Hollywood. And I am a geek.
And I am Peter Robinson, and I am a writer here in Los Angeles.
Yes, he is.
Woohoo! And you are a what?
Writer.
And you writer. Are what?
Nerd.
And oh, and I'm a geek.
There we go. Thank you for the tagline.
I am a geek. A very slow geek.
Embrace your geek.
It takes me a while.
It's our tagline. Say the tagline.
Any geek news this week?
I think I got some. You got some? Who's got a good one?
I've got some. Why don't you start, Matt, with some geek news?
Geek news. All right. So, the first potential virus for Windows Vista has been found. It's not even out yet, but it's already been found.
This is Windows Vista? Is that
Windows
Longhorn?
Vista is a new mod that's going to be added onto the new Windows Longhorn.
Oh, and so Longhorn's not even out yet.
Longhorn's not even out yet. And
if it ever does come out.
A virus writer has published the first examples of malicious code that targets Microsoft's upcoming command line shell.
Okay.
Main thingy. Code named Monad.
Monad.
Which sounds awfully light. Exactly. Yeah, thank you, Tom. According to Finnish antivirus maker F-Secure, if the technology is included in Windows Vista, these could be one of the first viruses to target the new operating system formerly known as Longhorn. F-Secure said Thursday. So,
It's formerly known. So Longhorn
is now
new name
is going to be Vista.
Oh, I didn't know they had come up with an official
name.
That
makes more sense.
Yes. Yeah, you know, exactly.
Windows Vista.
Yeah, Windows Longhorn sounds a little George W. Bush to me, surprisingly.
Well,
yeah.
Longhorn was always just a working title. Yeah. I'm not sure how that came about, but, you know. So, they've written a virus for an operating system that's not out yet.
And it's already out. Monad will support Windows 2003. I mean, XP. It's just going to...
Those hackers always on the cutting edge.
Yep, absolutely.
Great.
So, basically, they're saying so Windows users don't need to worry about it right now. Don't panic. Our software is fine right now, but in the future,
you might use it. You should worry about it.
Yes.
I think Bill Gates is just really bored, so he's writing viruses for his own programs.
Could be.
You know? Buy a Mac. Don, what about you? Do you have any geek news?
I have a rockin' news story for the geriatric crowd listeners.
Cloud? I'm Asian.
Did you know, I looked at our stats, online stats, and apparently 85% of our listeners are over 60.
No, they're not.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, you can actually tell the age on...
Oh, you're such a liar. I hate that Aaron suckers me in for about 13 seconds every single time.
Alrighty. An 80-year-old Florida video gamer is looking to reclaim her world record. Doris Self is used to turning heads as she plays video games. To find an 80-year-old white-haired woman sitting at an arcade game, it amazes them, she says. Self's expertise is even more remarkable. The Florida resident is headed to Croydon, England later this month, in search of a record Q-bert score at the Classic Gaming Expo UK.
Kick ass.
She was once the world record holder, and until the record was taken from her when a 72-year-old New Hampshire man dethroned her as world champion.
That's exciting. Yeah. I think we need to set her up versus the blind kid in a fighting game.
Well, wait. She's playing a game that no new players are joining. So she's playing
people... She is
people.
A Q-bert fanatic. That is her thing. She plays Q-bert. She won't even try Pac-Man because she says, that would probably blow my mind. So she owns... She's this 80-year-old woman owns her own Q-bert machine out in her apartment.
Man.
She says she plays it every night before bed. And later this year, she'll be going to make her record of 1.8 million points.
Okay, here's the thing. I can remember Q-bert in my head.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember what the character looks like.
The little schnozzy guy with the one foot.
Yeah, and I cannot remember what the gameplay was like at
the
all.
The pyramid of blocks.
That
and you go, boot, boot, boot. And you try to change all the colors to one color.
Yes.
The snake, that's actually a spring. It's like, doing. Dong.
Okay.
Yeah,
I remember that.
It was a really simple game, but surprisingly hard.
It was.
I'm a Joust fan. I am a Joust fan from way back. That was my game. I loved Joust.
Centipede.
Crossbow. Right here. Love
crossbow.
I loved crossbow.
Oh, this could totally turn into an old video game show very
but
easily.
It's not.
As opposed to old video gamers.
But
it's not.
So, Doris Self, on behalf of Geeks On, since apparently you're part of our main demographic, thank you very much for Aaron.
We love you.
We love you, and we wish you the best in England on August 13th. Best of luck.
I'd like to get her on, Ghost Recon. I'd kick her ass. All right.
I thought you were going
to... It'd be nice to see you beat someone on Ghost Recon.
Oh. Damn.
I didn't know you were bringing it.
Never do that again.
Oh, it's already been brought in.
Oh, yeah? Peter just said you got served. It was funny. It was funny.
Peter's so street.
This article got served.
Oh my God, Aaron got served.
Did you guys ever see that South Park episode?
I just saw it the other day.
Oh my God, it's so funny. Okay. Anyway.
Moving on.
This is an article about scientists, researchers who are researching things again that we already know. I don't know why they continually do research on obvious things.
Is this the Aaron school of I hate? Why are we researching this?
Well, no.
Why are we doing studies?
Right. This doesn't fall into the category of we should be studying the people that are making these studies.
Right.
Although it does teeter on it. A group of scientists have discovered recently that the more money you have, the more sex you'll get. So rich people...
All together now.
Ooh. No, this makes complete sense. Because in order to do this study,
right,
they had to go out and get some money, get a grant, and then figure out how much sex they had based on how much grant money they could spend.
That would,
this is genius.
That would that actually is more genius than what they actually did. They just did a whole bunch of... They interviewed about close to 15,000... About 14,000 men and 14,000 women.
They just talked to them?
Online questionnaire. And they asked them, you know, all these questions about, are you attracted to men who are have more money, less money? And they found out that men and women are attracted to people with more money. Duh. But that men are the only ones who kind of cash in on it. That men are the ones having more sex because of that. Women with lots of money, I guess they just go shopping. Guys with lots of money, they go get sex. So anyway, no shit.
You just actually reminded me of a study I read. I got no site to send you people to, but I remember reading this study, so look it up. I don't know. They did a study to discover whether or not money could buy happiness, right?
Right.
And they found, yes, absolutely, money can buy happiness. But there was a twist. The more money you had, up to $60,000 a year of income, the increasingly happy someone became. Above $60,000, the increased income no longer made an impact on happiness.
Mm.
So there seemed to be like a cutoff point.
So in other words, as long as you feel safe, you're happy.
As long as there's a certain degree, right. security in your life. Yeah.
Interesting.
So security means happiness, not money.
Well, a lot of people measure security by money.
I measure it by video games. Go ahead, Peter.
Oh, okay. I just read about an interesting technology. Using fiber optics to bring the sun indoors. So basically what it does is you set up a big collector on top of your house, and it collects the light, strips out, you know, certain frequencies, then fiber optically brings it into your house. So you're not using electricity. Okay,
and it pipes it into like look like lights.
It looks
so you light your entire house.
There
just
is
with
an additional perk to this too. They don't discuss in that article where if a demon lord is attempting to dispose of the unicorn's horn, you can use those lights to blow him into the void.
Interesting point. You know, it's interesting. It's amazing that they didn't. It
was at the bottom in the related links. You didn't read the whole thing. Related links.
Yes, I see.
Matt catches up to the Ridley Scott comment.
All right. No. Oh, yes. Well, I'm catching up to the Ridley Scott comment. Took me a while to figure that one out. Okay, but the other things that are great about it is that it's not as hot as normal lights.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's no heat coming off of it. It's just bringing light in. There's no
coil to heat.
And also the frequency of light is much broader than the normal light, so it's more pleasant for the eyes.
Is it like sunlight?
It is sunlight.
It is straight out sunlight.
Now, without the UV.
Store it?
It just catching it and redirecting it in.
So at night you're screwed really need
light. It's
only
during the day.
Oh.
It's only during the day that it does stuff like that.
But it's great for like office buildings when you actually have interior offices. Now I have a question. Yeah. It does filter the light. Does it filter it enough where a vampire is still okay with the light being redirected?
We are geeks.
I think that depends. It depends on whether or not...
I was thinking the same thing.
It depends on whether or not you believe the concept that UV is really what kills vampires. Not the Yeah.
I honestly answered that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, if you believe that UV is what kills vampires, then I think that this would be a problematic thing.
That makes perfect sense to me.
But demon lords, on the other hand, it's not the UV, it's the normal sunlight, so you're
got fine. It.
Right.
That's interesting.
We're all good. Anyway, so my God,
hey Matt.
Yes, I don't know why I'm judging you guys because I'm just going to be just as bad in a second.
You're just jealous that you didn't think of it.
Shut up! Don't judge me. All right, so PlayStation 3, the Blu-ray drive may run faster than expected.
Oh, because they were commenting for a while that the regular DVD drive that would come in like. Which is in the Xbox now and the PlayStation streams faster than the Blu-ray technology were going to put in. So even though it stored more, you couldn't get the information off fast enough.
Yep.
So now they're talking that may change.
Yeah, it may be equipped with a faster than expected Blu-ray drive at launch. It emerged with a speedier format that will be available before the next generation machine is ready for retail. So, but the PlayStation 3 was originally said to launch with a single 36 megabit per second speed drive to run its optical media.
Mm-hmm.
But with the arrival of its 2x 72 megabyte per second drive this autumn, it's hoped that by the time PS3 launches in Japan in spring of 2006, faster formats will be readily available.
They better, because that would be a problem for them.
But Microsoft is like, well, we're sticking with what we got.
So, right.
There it is. But it
now,
has,
Microsoft also stated that they're up to upgrading their machines as the years go on.
Oh, so
if later on, well, or even if it's not an upgrade, if later on high definition movies catch on, that they will eventually sell an Xbox 360 with a high def drive inside it. But it would only be there for you to really play movies, not for any of the games.
Do you have high def, Aaron? You have all the toys.
No.
You don't?
No. I'm waiting.
I thought you have that.
No, I'm waiting for. I don't like plasmas. Excuse me. I don't like the plasma technology, and I don't like the LCD technology right now. So I'm waiting. Waiting. Don.
That noise made me really uncomfortable.
I was only slightly uncomfortable.
Okay.
I was actually excited.
No, that noise.
All right. Well, I see. I've got some news here about the new Rockstar game, Bully, which I'm sure all of you will be surprised to know parents' groups are already rallying against.
This is an interesting concept for a video game.
Okay, here's the concept. A skinhead thug wins a bloody playground fight with a classmate before hunting down a teacher as his next victim. This is Bully, a new video game that's been called the sickest ever, a sadistic orgy of violence where you win points for being the most vicious yob in a reform school.
Yeah, you play a bully in a reform school.
Okay.
The screens actually are very cool looking. Like, you get in the uniform. You're in, a private school uniform, and you're like this kind of...
I don't know.
It's like Manhunt, but in a schoolyard.
Well, wait a minute.
I don't know. It's getting to the freaky place for me. A little bit to the freaky place.
Well, first of all, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. The where did you get the that last quote about... Is that the
most
reaction?
Vicious yob in a reform school?
Is that
is the quote from the Daily Mirror.
Okay. I'm wondering if Rockstar would have put it that way.
No, Rockstar would not put it that way.
See, we don't know what the game concept quite is yet. It's a whole bunch of reactionaries giving you the concept.
Yeah, the game.
No, I don't think you're a skinhead. You're a kid who doesn't have
any hair.
Like, he looks like a bully, like kind of the bald head bully, but I don't think you play a skinhead. That's the reactionaries giving you the
horrified child welfare campaigners and teachers groups are calling on the government to ban the bully game. Bullying is not a game by any stretch of the imagination, they say. We have found we have around 4 suicidal children contacting us every day. 2 million children in the UK are bullied at school, with 40% enduring abuse twice a week or more. And the effects can last a lifetime. 1 in 12 youngsters is so traumatized that their education, relationships, and even their job prospects are affected. Between 10 and 15 children each year commit suicide after being picked on.
Okay. Coming from a nerd geek who grew up in a public school...
Yeah, but you're pretty good looking, so you weren't like,
I was,
picked on a lot, were you?
I was the nerd.
So actually, you got picked on.
When I moved, in grade school, I was like that was the target. Why
really?
Did I? Yeah, I should be broadcasting that.
Really?
Well,
well, it's funny because I had a different perspective on it. I was the brainy fat kid, but people figured out really quick the brainy fat kid. You might be able to outrun him, but he knows where your class is, and fat kids are strong. You know.
Yeah,
like, you're also Don. You're not just the brainy fat kid. You're big.
Yeah, you're
big.
But you know what? All fat kids are strong.
Yeah, but you're like the 6'6" tall, huge, gonna crush you and snap you in half.
Not in fourth grade.
You were like 6'2".
Well, I was like a foot taller than the rest of the kids.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
A foot taller.
I've got to weigh in on this one.
Okay.
When I was a kid. and I'm not proud of this, but I was making fun of a big heavy guy, and I thought because there were two rows of desks between me that I was safe until he waded through them, picked me up, and dropped me on my head. Yeah. So
I'm telling you, I'm always surprised that that as many fat kids are picked on as there are.
Don, because you know? They're not just they're the kid from the it's like the Star Wars kid. That's who's getting picked on.
Yeah.
Star Wars kid.
The Star Wars kid who with the lightsaber and the...
Yeah. The Star Wars kid.
Yeah.
I will guarantee you that kid is physically stronger than a lot of the people who pick
yeah,
on
him. Yeah, but he don't know it.
That's the problem.
Doesn't know it.
I don't know. He's going to pick up that broom and wail on someone's ass one day, I'm telling you.
Oh, no.
If he knew it, he'd be the bully. That's the whole point.
There you go.
So, anyway, my point is, these are reactionaries. It's an adult game. Kids aren't supposed to be playing it. They never reacted to the fact that you can play a video game and kill as many Koreans as you want to.
That's
true. Completely fine by them. Yeah,
that's
true. I mean,
true.
You know, come on.
Yeah, but I think that there's...
That's very true.
There's a difference here because...
But in this one, you're targeting children for violence.
Well, yes, but not Korean children.
Wait a minute. You play a card game where you lunch money, where you go and beat up little kids. Is that a sicko card game?
Lunch money is sicko.
But it's a fun game. As an adult, I should be able to play that game.
But it's a smaller audience. What are you saying, Peter? I'm sorry. We're cutting off Peter.
It's not that... Yeah, don't cut me off, man. What's up with that?
Beat him up!
Oh, God, another tree fell out.
So, no, look... I definitely think that they shouldn't, they shouldn't ban the game. I think that's ridiculous. But you give it a very mature adult rating.
Yeah,
you know?
It's going to come out as a mature rating.
Well, they are trying right now to ban the game. But
yeah, well, they're never going to pull.
It hasn't gone through the British equivalent of the ESRB yet, right?
Mm.
Which is the BBC.
They're trying to ban it in England, which they could do.
Okay.
But this is unlikely to prevent its release to date, as the BBFC has only once failed to certificate a game. Mm-hmm. This was in 1997 when it refused a rating for Carmageddon, in which players are encouraged to run over pedestrians. And even in that decision, it was later overruled by the Video Appeals Committee. Right. Hmm. So they have never.
And you remember Carmageddon? That was pretty hardcore. When you ran them over, they would stick to the front of the car and like, oh my god! And you would like impale them, and then you could. Launch them or something.
It was pretty
hardcore. I mean, it was about running people over and impaling them.
Yeah.
Wow.
But
Rockstar remains unrepentant. Let me just get the Rockstar quote out. Mm. There are no easy answers for the real-life problem of school safety. But we believe the stories in video games should be judged like other works of fiction and recognized as entertainment. Bully is a fictional story that portrays a comic and exaggerated view of a boarding school told with a merciless tongue-in-cheek humor.
I think that's completely fine.
I think that they...
I can't wait to play it.
I have to admit, as soon as I read that someone was trying to ban the video game, I'm like, I need it. Where is it?
But to play the bully going around in a like a private school would be pretty... That would be fun. If it's done in a funny way...
I do think that some of these games need a tougher rating. I do think that. I think that it's, Grand Theft Auto is not an R game.
I think they need tougher controls.
What do you mean Grand Theft Auto isn't an R game?
I don't think they need a tougher rating.
You think it's a rated X game?
Because these kids can trick your mom.
Well, I don't think it's rated X when they talk about rated X.
I blame the parents.
Okay.
A woman sued, I think it was EA, because her kids brought her a video game that was rated M.
Right.
Told her, like, it was
mild.
Yeah, mild. Yeah.
M means mild.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that when we say rated X, we're talking about hardcore sex.
We're talking about only adults.
Yeah, well, I think...
Period. Not even if your parents agree. For example, a rated R movie, you can, as a child, you can watch if your parent thinks that it is appropriate. For example, you
Saving
could
Private
watch
Ryan.
Saving Private Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your parents should be allowed to make that type of decision for their kid. I agree.
Okay, but I think that when you have a game like these games, which is actually, I mean, really, honestly, you know, it's a fun game. Okay,
mm-hmm.
It is a very fun game, but it encourages you to go out and be brutal, and rewards you for that. I mean, I'm talking about. This isn't a game like, you know, you play Halo, you go out, you kill people. That's fine. You know, that's... No, really, honestly. It's not that incredibly lifelike.
Right.
You know, and...
What about Ghost Recon?
Ghost Recon...
Let me submit this to the jury here. people who are going to play that video game and then go out and emulate it are people who would also not play that video game and go out and emulate it.
Well, he's not talking about necessarily people going out and snapping and going.
No, he's talking about triggers. You know,
you're talking about
just trigger
kids shouldn't be allowed to view certain things because it affects their emotional development.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, I think anything that encourages, I mean, in San Andreas, you know, you take a knife, you run up, you slit people's throats as you walk down the
street.
But
here's the problem. Here's the problem is a parent should be able to make those decisions of how their kid is raised. For example, Grand Theft Auto got an M rating for the violence, okay? Where you go and you run people over, you shoot people, you beat the snot out of hookers, you do all sorts of horrible things, okay? Now, everyone was fine with it being M rated then. Now, as soon as you download something and you have sex with somebody, which to me far pales compared to violence, it becomes an adult only, which means the government has decided for you and as a parent that sex, which is normal and fine with me, is so horrible, it's over being able to decapitate people. So they've decided to parent for you, and I think they did it incorrectly.
Okay.
That's valid.
So I think they should give me tools to decide how I want my child to be raised and F the government about how they decide to,
I would agree with you, but I'd also just point out those tools are in place. When you read the M rating on there, it lists why it's an M rating.
And I think it's done fine. I think it's fine as is.
Sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, just in terms of what you're already talking about, we already say that, the X rating, which exists right now, already says, you can't make a decision on this.
Okay? Right.
So we already do that.
And I think that's incorrect.
Okay.
I think they should give you titles and labels and stuff.
I would agree. I've always thought it was ridiculous that there are X-rated movies that contain sex, but there's no X movies that have been rated X for violence.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that. I mean, I think that basically this is my point, though.
Okay? Right.
That's Puritan America, though.
In the same way that you're not allowed to yell fire in a crowded theater.
In the
same way that you're not really allowed to encourage people to break the law.
No, that's not true. You can encourage people to break the law. Okay.
But you can't encourage people to say, go out and kill people.
That you can't do. That's true.
You can't?
You cannot do that.
You cannot do that. You can't say, everybody go out and kill cops.
Right.
You can't do that. That's
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you can't do that.
There are specific things you can't incite people to do.
Right.
Killing the president, killing people.
I knew that.
That sort of thing.
Okay.
You can't exhort people to do that.
So in the same way that you can't do that, I think that there's a line here too with video games where with video games it starts to become something that's encouraging people in a realistic fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And my main issue is realistic fashion and violence.
Mm-hmm.
That at that point, you need to make a decision that kids really shouldn't have access to this. And I mean, I'm sorry. I don't think that Grand Theft Auto is something that young kids should have access to.
Neither do I.
Age 12.
But
even if the
M rating is saying that.
Yeah.
M rating is saying this is not good for children. You should not give this to your children.
Right. But I'm also saying that, the M rating is kind of like the equivalent to an R rating.
Okay? Right.
And what it says is it's saying it's
suitable if you give them permission.
It's suitable,
if your parents have decided that they are that your kid can handle it, then they can have it.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is this, and if a parent wants a kid to have it, they're just going to give it to him, and that's fine. But I think there should be a rating that is stronger than R, and maybe it's not.
Stronger than R, less than X.
Yeah, maybe it's maybe it's not.
Well, there is. It's called AO, Adults Only, which is
what
Rockstar has now for their game.
And I'm just saying, I think that the Rockstar game should get that.
You're saying there should be something between AO and
No. AO is fine. I'm just saying that Rockstar. All I was really saying is that it shouldn't get an M rating. It should get something stronger than that because
if they get an M rating, it's because they fought to get the game down to an acceptable M rating.
Right.
Right.
With games like the game I'm working on right now, there are certain changes that need to be made for it to hit the rating you want.
Right.
And so if it's getting an M rating, it's because I can guarantee you Rockstar had to pull out some stuff.
Well, I'm sure it did, but I think even with the stuff that they pulled out, they were given the wrong rating.
That's crazy.
Well, they pulled out the sex, the hot coffee thing.
Yeah, but
they got them down to the M rating, and then some clever person found the link.
Crazy.
And now they're in trouble.
But even having... I don't care about the hot coffee stuff. I'm not talking about that at all. I'm talking only about the violence that's in that game. And I'm just saying that that game, you know, when... There are a lot of games that are rated mature,
mm-hmm.
okay? And those games, you know, a mature kid, you know, can play them because you know, maybe it's got some sexual content or something like that, you know? And it's up to a parent to
God
decide.
Of War, adults only?
No.
Hard call.
Rated R.
Hard call, but God of War is less realistic. It's less your environment than San Andreas is. San Andreas is they're going out and they've said, look at us, we've made the city just like the city. We've made, you know, the people just like the people. We're you know.
So decapitating people and slicing them in half and breaking their necks is less violent than...
I would argue that making it more realistic is a good thing because the more cartoony you make it, the more palatable and absorbable it becomes.
I would disagree with that because I would say that when you make it very realistic and then you reward people for that realism, for doing awful realistic things, you condition people to not find – you decondition people to it, to the experience. When it's cartoony, you know, it's not a real experience for people. People don't relate it to reality.
Let's get a comment.
I actually strongly disagree on that because it bypasses your defenses on that level.
Let me wrap this up.
Maybe make this a topic one day because we are like.
Well, before we let me just counter argue that you're not going to. No one I know is going to be able to do the moves that are in God of War. It's impossible. No one's strong enough. No one's a badass warrior enough. They're not going to do it. Okay.
Oh, you want to see some God of War?
I want to
check this out.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's bring it down, baby. Bring it down right now. Two geeks enter, one geek leaves.
Aaron's going to jump 35 feet in the air and then toss Peter up.
It's impossible to pull these moves off, so people aren't going to emulate them. Okay. But walking up behind someone and slitting their throat, anyone can do that. And that's what Grand Theft Auto is stuff that anyone can do. And that's my problem.
Okay. You know? Well, we'll save this for another time. Go on. Just let's clear out the last few news stories quick.
Okay.
I have just a quick one about Xbox connectivity. You've heard that you'll be able to Xbox 360 connectivity. You've heard you'll be able to connect USB devices like MP3 players and stuff. Well, a guy has posted online some photos where he's connected his PSP, which is a Sony product. It found the device. You can look at the photos directly from there. You can stream the music into your video games from the PSP. Look at movies. It's all there. He has a whole bunch of other pictures. He's got hooked up, I think, his iPod. So he has entire iTunes music library streaming into his games while he's playing. Anyway, I'll put the link on our website. Very cool. Check it out.
That's crazy. Donnie?
Peter.
Okay. Peter.
I'm going to go back and throw in two more thoughts on what we were just
talking
about.
No. Let's go.
I know. But what's the difference between NC-17 and adults only? I mean, it's still saying it's for adults only. Okay. And second, I actually really like these games I'm talking about. I just don't think kids should play them. I mean, I play them when I like them.
Well, I know.
AO is not the equivalent of NC-17. AO is the equivalent of X. That needs to be very clear.
But what is the difference between NC-17 and X?
NC-17 says that you can get in if you're 17
years old. Oh, and 18. I see. Yeah.
Okay. And X is like 21.
Then, again, what's the difference between adults only and X? I mean, you know, they're the same thing. So, you know.
Right.
But for different reasons.
Right. Okay. Good point. Right.
Right.
Okay. So.
We're definitely going to have to bring this up as a topic for another time.
My news story. Yeah. Sorry about that. My news story is Voltron is being made into a movie.
Cool.
Do you guys remember Voltron?
They're actually using the castle down in San Diego that the Mormons have.
I don't know.
Have you seen that?
Wait, Voltron is the...
The five, and I'll form the head.
Yeah.
It's. I hope they're doing the lions, first off. But
yeah. I hope so.
As opposed to the spaceships?
Oh, my God. No. Lions.
You remember the spaceships, don't you?
Yeah.
You remember the disappointment of tuning in at 4:30 when you were a kid and seeing the goddamn spaceship on the screen and going, no!
Yeah, not good.
So, the story.
I just don't like the, you know, I'm going to change and become the arm.
I'm just worried that it's going to be like Thunderhawks.
Did they do Thunderhawks as a movie?
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't even know that.
I don't think anyone went to see it.
Yeah, well, right now there's two robot movies, giant robot movies. There's Voltron and Transformers in the mix right now.
Transformers is going to whoop ass all over Voltron.
But it's a live action?
I believe it is live action.
Yeah, they're both live action.
Yeah. And well, the story being, I just have to read this. The story being developed will be based on the series about five Maverick Explorer pilots who must travel to the planet Eris to learn how to operate Voltron, a giant mechanical warrior formed by five smaller robots. The gargantuan robot is the last hope against the evil Drool Empire that has subjugated Earth and taken control of the universe.
D-R-U-L with an umlaut.
Now, they spelled it D-R-U-L-E.
Oh, well, it used to be Let's D-R-U-L see. With an umlaut.
We need a Gamera
the thing
movie.
Is, though, I think the only way the well, maybe not the Transformers, but I think the only way the Voltron will work is if they take it dead seriously.
Right.
If it's two Power Rangers, it's not going to appeal to the people who once liked it, even though it was the Power Rangers at that time. And kids today,
I just can't imagine it looking.
It's exactly the Power Rangers. Well, do you remember that video where they actually had a Transformer turn from a beetle into a robot? It was a CGI video somebody did.
I don't know if I saw that.
It looked really cool.
It looked pretty good.
So I was like, if they can do it just like this guy did his just little, it looked like a bug sitting along the side of the road and it turned into a robot. And I was like, whoa!
I'm going to be really worried that it's all going to be about like these big transforming robots that come down to Earth and befriend kids.
Yeah, and they're going to lose story.
Yeah,
Gamera. Gamera. Exactly.
Well, they just did that. Cartoon Network redid the Transformers cartoon, right?
Yeah.
And it was this weird. It was that Japanese hybrid again.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all about like robot friendship with children. And I'm like, oh, for
lots
pizza.
Of kids.
They lost the Battle of the Cylons and stuff like that. They lost not with Cylons. With
nah, and you
I was like, wow, that is a cross.
Decepticons. That's a really good.
Lost
show.
The battle with the Decepticons. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
By your command. So, all right, hurry up. Let's wrap this.
Last closeout. Exposed genitalia makes a breakthrough on Japan's silver screen. Yes, you will now finally be able to see
not the big stars
exposed genitalia in a Japanese movie.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Jennifer Connelly's.
So, later on this month, they're going
to
release
Who was hot enough to drop that law? Yep. Do they have a...
The renowned director, Nagisa Oshima, who is the helm for Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, has been involved in this battle, and he basically brought it through, and he's got this revealing movie, and he says it's art, and it's going to show some genitalia, and damn it, you're going to watch it.
Wow.
So, it's out.
Goodbye, tentacle sex.
Yep.
I think that would get an AO rating.
Yep. No, what they're going to do is the first one that's actually going to show genitals is going to be Kinsey, the movie Kinsey, which they're going to send over there. So,
their genitals in Kinsey?
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
I don't think there's anyone in Kinsey whose genitals I want
to
see.
Well, what's his name? Liam Neeson's supposed to be hung like a bear. I read it.
Qui-Gon?
Yeah, Qui-Gon's hung like a bear.
Double bladed lightsaber.
Yes, he's got a big old double bladed lightsaber.
Wow.
Of love.
Who knew?
Yeah. So, there it is. Kinsey.
I now know far too much about Liam Neeson.
Yeah, well.
Well, our geek topic this week, or one of them, is geeks on writing.
Excellent.
We all. Our writers here.
Yeah. Well, we do putter at it.
Well, some of us do it and
Pete's
some of us putter at it.
Pete's the only professional.
That's not true.
I have multiple awards under my belt, thank you very much.
That's right.
Oh. New York State's Young Playwright, two years running, bucko.
How dare you?
Jackass!
How dare you?
Talk about paid, man. Paid.
He's been paid.
Oh.
You really...
I'm like one of the only ones who haven't been...
I know. Deeper here.
I actually need two rows of desks to get up enough steam here.
I want to talk about geek writing this week, partly because we got a great interview at Comic-Con that we are going to play.
Yeah, with Orson Scott Card.
Orson Scott Card, and he...
if you don't know who he is, you'll find out in a minute.
And he's got great books.
Right, and you guys talked a lot about his writing and writing style, so I figured since we have all done that, and we're all geeks, and I kind of consider him a geek writer.
He is.
Why don't we talk about what it's like to be a geek writer?
Excellent.
One of the things I'd like to know is what type of subjects do you geeks like to write about?
I mean, that's...
Do you feel like you... go down a certain path because you have geek tendencies,
oh, hell
or
yeah.
Are you open to everything?
Yeah,
No, I'm hellishly down that path, and basically the things that really interest me are much more outlandish. And actually, even if it's a straight story, I think that sort of sci-fi often comes in at an sort of oblique angle into something.
Mm-hmm.
So that when I'm even looking at a straight story, I'm really trying to come in from an oblique angle.
And, sure. You know. Using a sci-fi as a what-if.
I think it's because, as geeks, we tend to be more voracious consumers of story, mm-hmm. right? So we know what stories have been told
right.
in general. So we're not averse to telling the same story, but that same story needs to be told in a very different way. Otherwise, we've done it already. What's the point?
Right.
I think that geek writers are more... more open to the geeky type of story, sci-fi, fantasy, you know.
Right.
But I think that, you know, you still have other interests. And one of the things that Matt and I are talking about is not geeky at all. It's just a real-life person story.
Right.
But, yeah, no, but on the other hand, you know, the two things that we've worked on so far have been...
extremely geeky.
Extremely sci-fi. Yeah. One's a superhero film, you know, in a world of superheroes.
Right.
And another one's, you know, like...
sci-fi. Out the window.
I think there are
the
two
window.
Really yeah. common themes that most geeks tend to bring into their writing. Which is, I think there, once at one point, these two things were very common themes, but as we move into the more jaded kind of postmodernist writing styles, we see it fading away, is one, the basic concept of overdog and underdog. Geeks love the underdog. Mm-hmm. It's hard to think of a geek thing that doesn't have a strong underdog character in some way. And the other is the basic good versus evil. Mm-hmm. You know,
yep.
We like to see the premise of black versus white.
You know? Mm-hmm.
But I think geeks also embrace the shades of gray more than a lot of like, oh, I'm so going to get pounded for this, than say like Christian literature, right? Christian literature and fiction
I don't know. I think
tends to be very black versus white, but they don't like the shades of gray.
I think right? actually
that you're going to get pounded for that.
I think actually one of the things that geeks like is to solidify black and white, but mask it as...
I think
good writing always has gray in it.
Yeah.
But I like, you know, for example, Star Wars is a great example where you had a pretty much a guy with a black cap walking around on the screen. And, you know, it used to be, you know, they were cowboys with the black cap and the white cap, and it was just obvious.
Yeah, Luke were white, Darth Vader were
right.
black.
Right, and I think that a lot of times... it's interesting to do the same story like that, but dress them as Cylons.
Well,
now the great thing about the new Cylons is that they're trying to write in gray areas.
Yeah. Yeah.
But remember, the old Cylons, they just were metal toasters that just kicked ass.
Especially if anyone saw last night's Battlestar Galactica right. episode. Oh my God.
I have a bit of a problem with the gray area in sci-fi lately. Because I feel that there's this...
You and Flash Gordon.
Yeah, me and Flash Gordon. Wow, he's a righty. I feel that basically sci-fi and sort of television in general and imagination in general in terms of mass media has gone to this area that gray is cool, that
right.
finding the anti-hero yes. is cool, that finding that area that we can't really judge is cool.
Yeah.
And we've lost the iconography of what, like, Star Wars was originally.
Of I
what agree. Battlestar was originally. Is that we've lost these, you know, it's a story about gods. It's a story about this, that, or the other thing. I mean, even Hercules, which is a god story, became this, he's just a man, but he's not really, but it's a fight. You know, it became this, we're trying to find the fault in anyone. Nobody can just be noble for nobility's sake and evil for evil's sake.
I think it's not so much a comment on geek culture that that's happening so much as just a comment on the modern age we live in.
Right.
Frankly,
right.
to be completely honest, the Paladin character, I find boring nowadays.
Right.
Well, hang on.
Superman is boring to me.
Well,
right.
Superman's always been boring, but...
But no, wait a minute.
He's the quintessential light character.
I love
light
Superman.
And good,
no, wait a minute,
you know?
Wait a minute. But you liked Smallville...
No,
and
not especially.
Well, but no, I adore
Smallville. I had every time I came to your house, I had to watch a new episode of Smallville.
That's because we had guests who liked to watch Smallville after Buffy.
Okay, but
I don't dislike Smallville, but
even if you look at the good versus evil in mm-hmm. terms of, like, say, Star Wars,
right?
I mean, Star Wars is still a growth story. It's still about someone overcoming a flaw, and I mean, storytelling's
right. I mean,
well, and I would say also that we find the shades of gray in Star Wars when. Luke goes up against the Emperor in the end of the first trilogy.
Right.
We're not good versus evil anymore. There's like it's nice versus evil.
But the,
you know?
The yeah, but Anakin. The shades of gray have been.
Oh,
drawn.
No, you're saying Luke.
Oh. Yeah, yeah. I mean,
you mean
Luke,
you mean,
you know.
Sorry. Yeah. Okay, Luke.
I don't think there's any shades in that. I think that he starts going one way or the other, and we're supposed to believe he's going to pop one way or the other. I don't think even... In fact, this is the problem with George Lucas writing the second set of trilogies, is he doesn't know what gray means. His character pops like a bubble from good to evil with no transition, and there's like we're like, huh?
Yeah, Anakin was good at some point.
Yeah, episode one should have been a white movie, episode two should have been a gray movie, and episode three should have been a black movie, but it was not.
And George Lucas doesn't know what gray is, and that was the problem. I agree with kind of all of you. I believe that gray, bringing that gray area into storytelling and writing is what makes it complex and more interesting.
Absolutely.
But I also agree with you that the soiled hero is still in. It came in the 90s. It's still really in.
Totally.
And the bad guy who's got his, you know, who's, is he really bad? I mean, really? They're confusing complexity with abandoning, you're right, these icons that we used to identify with, the Flash Gordons and all that.
And I mean, the thing that's very funny to me is that I have this feeling. I have this feeling that I want iconography. I want sort of my good to be good, my bad to be bad. And a lot of my favorite sci-fi and fantasy stories, I love the fact that they're these diametrically opposed battles. And the people who are evil are evil. Yet, on the other hand, when I listen to George Bush and I hear him say, well, they're evildoers, you know, they're just bad, that's when I get this big angsty thing in my head and go, you know what? No. Life is not, you know, iconography.
But that's where complexity comes into those stories that
make... Let me throw this out. I mean, for me, my personal preference when I'm reading a story or watching a movie, this is what I like. I like to see that there is the castle of white, right? That one place, person, representation of actual good, right? The force of good on this world that you're existing in. I like to see the black castle, the force of evil, whatever that might be. And then I like for my story to exist with those things on the peripherals.
Yes.
I like for my story to know that both of them are there, and which will the hero pay allegiance to?
Right.
Will the hero overthrow one? Will, you know, what will happen?
So it's a it's a chance of decision. It's decision and indecision. Luke's indecision between, is he going to go to the dark side, is great. You know, the sort of Anakin, well, I guess, tacos or dark side? Dark side.
Right.
You know.
After tacos.
Yeah, after tacos, you know,
and
definitely.
Tacos.
And tacos. I mean, that drives me crazy because there's nothing huge about it. There's nothing beyond yourself about it, you know? And albeit I'm not the most religious person in the world, but there's something about casting yourself out to something beyond yourself that really I feel is missing in this effort for everything to be so quote-unquote real.
Well, hang on a second, though, because this is actually – I'm sorry. I think this whole conversation is ridiculous in a weird way.
Okay.
Sorry to say that. But look, okay, we're talking about complexity versus simplification. Okay, and we're using the first three Star Wars to support our arguments.
Well, we shouldn't have done that,
right?
I mean, you know, the first three Star Wars, you know, is neither complex nor simple. It's stupid. Okay, it's not shades of gray and realistic. It's not anything. You know, it's poorly written with bad transformations from good to evil.
Right,
and you can't support it. You can't use it to support that argument, okay? There are great movies that are about shades of gray. There are
I'm not saying that there are. What I'm saying is that
I have great to movies. Throw something in your teeth here with one thing, though.
Uh-huh.
The first three movies are archetypal, and I mean, they're used to illustrate archetypes by Joseph Campbell.
Right, yes.
Which means
you're talking about episodes 4, 5, 6 or 1, 2, 3?
4, 5, 6.
4, 5, 6. 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
Or were you talking about 1, 2, 3?
I was talking about 1, 2,
he was talking about 1, 2, 3.
I retract.
Yeah.
But,
no, I'm talking about 1, 2, 3.
But what I think we were saying is that there is a trend that started in the 90s that the good guy / bad guy is almost the same person.
Yeah.
And it's getting old.
Okay. But
is what we're saying.
I'd go farther back and say it's got its roots in the 70s and it was strong in the 80s.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, you're looking at Godfather and you're saying suddenly we're going to take as the protagonist, you know, someone who is actually abhorrent to our own personal beliefs. What I'm saying is that we have gone away from archetypes. I'm not saying that it's simple versus complex storytelling. The storytelling is not what I have a problem with. What I have a problem with is what the actual nature of the people that we're representing. We're saying no longer can it be that person is black and, well, and that person is evil, you know, and this person is good. What we have to say is that this person is somewhere in the middle. We have no more, you know,
Darth Vaders.
We have no more Darth Vaders.
We also saw a shift away from what we saw as, I guess what I think of as a redemption for the villain.
Yeah.
Which was, you know, like Sherlock Holmes, to make an example, probably would not have, like, cornered Moriarty in a dark alley and then shot him through the head to make sure he never did anything evil again, right? That's kind of Sherlock Holmes, the classic hero.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the 80s, what is the biggest superhero in the 80s, in my opinion, is Wolverine, right? Who would
in
corner
comic.
Moriarty in the alley and skewer him to make sure he didn't do anything bad again.
Yeah.
Right? That's because that is our view of what punishment is now. We don't see redemption. We think that that rapist should die. We think he should be castrated, mutilated, and thrown off the top of a building.
I don't think that I necessarily 100% agree with that.
Okay.
I think that there's a – look, you're saying that movies like Star Wars
are archetypal.
Are archetypal. And that back in the day, they used to have more archetypal films.
Yes.
Yet back in the day, you know, the same type – probably the same time that you're talking about where when Star Wars was made, not too long after that, you had movies – like A Clockwork Orange, okay?
Which is an archetypal redemption story of taking somebody who's ultimately evil at the beginning and turning him into good and saying, is that actually...
You completely don't understand that movie.
That's not a redemption story.
No, they're trying... They're saying we can make him good, but actually they're like, he's...
Matt, you're trying to push something into a box it doesn't fit into. A peg it doesn't fit into. A hole it doesn't fit into. That's it. Okay.
Square peg, round hole.
Yeah, square peg, round hole.
English.
This is not – it's not archetypal in any way. This is – that's a movie about a bad person who's not redeemed in any way.
Right.
I mean, he's – tell me what archetype he fits.
Well, what they're saying is that the good quote-unquote that tries to make him into a good society-fitting person is just as evil – as what he was initially.
And how is that archetypal?
Well, they're both...
That's not archetypal at all. That doesn't... Tell me what archetype any of those characters fits into.
But wait. I think you're reacting to something that... You're reacting to something that we're saying is that we're not saying that we don't want those things to exist, those stories to exist.
No, you're just saying that it's different.
What we're saying... What I'm at least saying is that there has been a trend to... it's almost like overcomplicating everything.
Uh-huh.
Like everything is in the gray area.
Everything is Jung and Freud and inner mantra and
For example, our hero is always dark. It just always has to be dark. Lately, I think we may be crawling out of it. For example, Spider-Man is a great example where it's crawling out. But like, you know, all of our all of our John Connors and all of our Bruce Willis's and all of our they're all dark heroes. And I'm just saying that it's getting a little tiring.
Okay, well, hang on a second.
I'm a little tired about that.
But you just gave an example. You said Spider-Man was a character who's not dark. Okay, you've got Lord of the Rings. You know, who's a character who
One of the reasons why I think Lord of the Rings was so great was because it really harkened back to mythology.
Yeah,
and it was also written like freaking Lord of the Rings is also just a strictly white versus black.
But it was made now.
There are no shades of gray there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look, my point,
Gollum.
Here's my point. It's really easy to say that this is the trend of what's happening now,
mm-hmm.
and yet when you go back, and you start to really examine those areas, you'll find that they had just as much richness and depth in different types of movies that were made back then. It's kind of like someone once argued to me, they said, look, you know, the movies that were made back in the day are so much better than the movies
I'm
that
not
were made
saying back. Simple versus complex at all. Yes, there is that richness within those stories.
Uh-huh.
There is the ability to find gray within those stories. It's that they're not striving for the archetype. George Lucas, in the first three movies now that he's made, 1, 2, 3, did not strive for the archetype. He didn't set us up so we're going, wow, it's this good versus this evil. So there's a strive and a fight
in the middle for the gray. Well, he basically said, everybody's gray, everybody's bland, everybody has a story. So
1 through 3 didn't approach an archetype. It never set one up. Yeah, so it's hard to say
exactly.
That.
No, that's what I'm saying. It never even tried to set one up.
Right.
In 4, 5, 6, it really set up an archetype of this is the dark side. Flat out. This is the light side.
Right.
Flat
and
out.
I understand that.
Right.
But just because George Lucas is no longer.
No, I'm just using something that is iconic for me as a geek.
No. You know? I mean,
I could use Wizard of Oz in the same way.
I understand. I'm just saying that just because George Lucas is no longer striving for an archetype doesn't mean that movies today are either one of two things. Not striving for archetypes, okay?
I think movies in general are not striving for archetypes, and you can look at the way box office is done and like
that. Maybe I should say are striving less for archetypes than they used to.
By far. I would say by 90%.
Okay, well,
do you have any documentation on that number, please?
No, I would just say that in the 70s, the movies that were made were films where basically, I mean, I'm quoting William Goldman in The Big Picture, the book, it's called The Big Picture, or the screen trade, something like that. He says, you know, he talked to a movie executive who said in the 1970s when he was leaving the business, he said, why are you leaving the business? He said, well, because when I was coming up in this business, we basically would say that 40% of what we're going to put out on the screen is going to be there to make us money, you know? The remaining 60%, about 20% of it, I'm just going to make films that I'm proud of. Films that say something bigger than me. And the rest of it, we're going to take a chance on. And then after Star Wars, which was the first blockbuster, everybody's out for opening day, opening weekend budget. So it doesn't matter what the story is. It has to do with, very simply, it has to do with how much money can we get people into the seats. And you know, I think that, like, Catwoman could have been an incredibly archetypal story. They lost it. You know, all of these superhero films that are coming out right now are archetypal stories by nature. And they're losing it. They're losing it. That's what I liked about Batman Begins, because maybe actually there's a glimmer that we're trying to find it back again.
Okay, but I sort of feel like we're taking a bunch of hodgepodge of concepts and kind of mashing
them together.
We were
supposed to be talking about writing, weren't we?
Well, yeah. But, you know, we tangential.
Well, maybe we should segue to our interview. Unless you want to,
please
let's do it,
because that's it was Peter and Matt interviewed Orson Scott Card,
who, if you don't know, wrote Ender's Game and Xenocide and the Alvin Maker series. What else? We actually list them down in the interview.
They're in the interview. He's written so many books. It's amazing how much of the shelf is taken up by his books.
Yeah.
We are here with Orson Scott Card, who is the writer of the Ender's Game series and of the
Hegemon,
Xenocide, the song,
Alvin, the Maker series. Thank you for coming on our show.
My pleasure. All you're really saying by listing all those books is that I'm a really old guy, because I've been around a long time and there's a lot of books already written.
Actually, what we're really saying is that you've written a lot of really great stuff for the people who know the material.
That is so painful to hear. Hurt me again.
So you just finished the Alvin the Maker series. You just did the fifth book. Oh, I see. So it's not done yet.
No. In fact, I just did the sixth book, but there will be a seventh, and that's the final one. It's definitely done, because at the end of the seventh one, which will be called Master Alvin, Alvin will be very, very dead. Thoroughly, completely dead. Not like Ender in Children of the Mind. He's completely dead. So that's how people will know the series is over.
I am really excited. I have two more books to go.
I noticed in a lot of your books you have almost this Mozartian quality with a lot of your protagonists. Is there these kids, they're geniuses, they're slightly flawed, but they're always bursting with these ideas and they're being suppressed by it. Is that an intentional thing, or is that something that you're just constantly exploring?
The fact is, what I write is biographies of my characters, and biography begins with childhood. That's the most interesting period. But in real biographies of real people, you never know. I mean, they never have enough data about the childhood of the person. So they skip over that really fast. But that's where the character is formed. That's where you make. That's where you learn all the scripts that you act out during your life. So as a fiction writer, I spend a lot of time there because how are you going to know who a person is unless you know what helps shape them in childhood? But I don't think of myself as writing books about children. I think of myself as writing books about people, but people all start as children.
My ex-girlfriend always used to say that she loved Ender's Game because it didn't pander to her, and she had read it as a kid and was really struck by the fact that it wasn't speaking to into her as a... It wasn't speaking down to her, basically. Is that because of what you're talking about there?
Yeah, Ender's Game is not a children's book. It's not a book for teenagers. It is an adult novel, and I made no compromises whatsoever for young readers. It was intended to be absolutely for grown-ups. So when kids adopt that book, that's entirely on their own hook. They're not getting any help from me. And yet they do embrace it because the story speaks to them, which makes me feel like I may have tapped into something that's important to kids.
One of the things that I really, really love about your books is the voices of your characters, and you are so able to find dialogue and voices in your characters. Do you have any thoughts on where that comes from? Did you develop that? You know.
Well, the sad thing is, you know, I do a lot of teaching of writing. I've written about how to write, but the one thing I can't teach anybody about is dialogue because I have no idea. That's just something that just comes. I can tell you that for me, the process is that when I'm writing a novel or a story, I'm an actor improvising all of the parts. And so it comes out of the actor part of me more than the writer part of me. It comes out of the snotty little kid who always thought of wisecracks in class. It comes out of that guy, too. And so just as when I'm sitting on a science fiction panel like I was today at the Comic-Con, I'm actually thinking of about 15 wisecracks per minute. And I think it's exemplary self-control on my part that I only say about one of them each minute.
John Ridley, another writer, he wrote the movie Three Kings, once said to me that he thought that great writing was great listening. And it was observing sort of people in situations around you and dialogue around you and cataloging it for later use. Do you believe that as well?
Well, I don't do it consciously, but of course we all do it unconsciously. We learn about human behavior from watching human behavior. But no, I don't really model characters on people that I've seen, and I don't snatch up dialogue that I've heard because my memory's too bad. I couldn't remember it, and I never think to write it down, and so I'm just winging it as I write. Now, that doesn't mean that something hasn't entered my unconscious and popped right out again later. It's just that I can't give credit to the sources I'm stealing from because I have no idea what they were.
Now, music tends to be a big theme in a lot of your books, especially in the song series. Where did that come from?
Well, I had nearly perfect pitch when I was a little kid and could harmonize by the time I was six, just make up harmonies. So I sang a lot. I was a boy soprano, and I still sing. I'm the tenor in the church choir.
Castrati or no?
Not a countertenor, mind you, just a tenor. But I love singing. It's just something that I enjoy doing. And then in addition to that, I played musical instruments. I plink around on the piano. I was, you know, during the folk era in the 60s, I carried a guitar all around through college and sang at every opportunity. But those were the days when we'd all get together and sing Peter, Paul, and Mary and Bob Dylan songs, you know. And then I was in a marching band. I played sousaphone. And then when I was in an orchestra, I played French horn. Now that's an embouchure shift. So yeah, music's important to me. But the nicest thing about it is I can tell you somebody is a genius composer, but I don't have to show you anything that they compose. Because, you know, you can't hear it. So it's actually a safe way to make a character a genius without having to embarrass yourself by proving that you don't know how to do the genius stuff yourself.
On that note, it's very interesting because in your Ender's Game series, he was also a genius. And he really was. He was very smart. I mean, I was really impressed by that. How did you think about him in that case to create your character?
Well, in that case, I had him be a genius, first of all, in military strategy. And that was the biggest challenge, was to come up with situations that would actually be challenging and then think of the right answer, which meant I had, you know, it's a good thing that I've been reading a lot of history and military history over the years, so I had some idea. But the most important thing about Ender, the thing that made him the commander of choice, is the way that he deals with other people. And on that score, I could get into all of their motivations. I could make all of the characters up. And when you can do that, you can control the situation. Real life is messy because we don't get to make anybody up, not even ourselves. And so people do things for complicated reasons they don't understand. So in my book, I knew everybody. And so I could make him a really effective commander.
Do you have any very specific advice for young writers getting into it?
Yeah, first of all, they got to write their brains out. What are they waiting for? You know, there's nothing you're going to major in college that's going to teach you how to be a writer. What teaches you how to be a writer is to write, you know, 10,000 pages. Just start writing now. And if you have a lot of really crappy pages that you got to get rid of, write them. Get them out of the way. Get it out of your system. And as soon as you got it done, send it off. If you find yourself blocked on something, it means you're telling the wrong story. It means you need to go back and reinvent it and have different stuff happen to different people and have people react differently. But you just keep doing it and send it off to publishers. Publishers don't care how old you are. All they care about is the story good. And if you're 12 and you can write a story that they want to publish, cool. They don't care. They'll send you the check and you can cash it just the same as if you were 50. The other thing is don't major in English. I say that as an English professor. But in truth, in English, they teach you to value things in literature that will really interfere with you as a writer. If you're thinking about symbols and metaphors and so forth while you write, you're dead because you're not telling the story anymore. It's as if you had a play that you had written up on the stage and the actors are performing, and every now and then you jump up on the stage, you go, hey, did you notice that? I wrote that. Me, I did that. You know, you don't want to do that. That gets in the way. So you let the characters do all the talking. You let them tell the story, and you stand back and don't let the reader ever notice you as a writer. And the result will be you'll end up having a really interesting style. People will talk about how clever your symbols and metaphors are, but they will have been honest symbols and metaphors because they will have come in without your even being aware that you were doing them.
How many hours a day do you write? I assume you write every single day. What's your schedule normally like?
What a false assumption you have made. I write only on days when the checks are about to bounce. You know, writing's hard work. It's my job, and I'm a lazy person. So the truth is, in order to write a novel, I have to have complete concentration on it for days and days. And you know, it takes me about 4 to 6 weeks to write a novel. And so during that time, then I'll be likely to write 3 to 4 hour writing sessions, and sometimes I do two of those in a single day. But then when I'm not working on a novel, I don't want to write anything. I play video games, I get up, I exercise, I play games with my family, I watch movies, I read books. You know, I have a life, you know, and the work is only when I need to.
What a good life.
It's great. It's a wonderful life. It's the one we bet on. It's the one we gambled on. It means that I was there for each of my children's first step, for their first word. I changed as many diapers as my wife did, but that's, you know, that's about being close to your children and serving them, and that's how you love them. So I wouldn't have missed any of it.
First, I want to ask about the new book, Magic, I believe it is?
Magic Street.
Could you tell us a little about it without giving anything away?
Well, I intend to give it all away. Well, you know, but Magic Street... Yeah. Now, Magic Street is set in a black neighborhood in Los Angeles where magic breaks out into the world in the form of dreams and wishes that come true, only it's your worst nightmares. It's the wishes that are your deep unconscious longings, and it always comes true in the most hideous possible way. And so, you know, you can't go to the LAPD and say, hey, we're having a magic problem in our neighborhood. They're not going to take it seriously, so they have to solve it themselves. And the real challenge there for me was, of course, I'm not black, probably never will be. And I was setting it in a black neighborhood. All the characters are black. Black middle-class neighborhood. I'm not trying to do the mean streets. But I got help from some friends who obviously grew up in that culture, and I'm very proud of it. I think that I did a pretty darn good job of getting the sense of that neighborhood, because it's really as much about the heroes... you know, it's about their adventures and so on, but it's also about the community they live in and how that community creates their neighborhood together. I'm very proud of this book.
Excellent. So two things. One that's always intrigued me. When I read one of the Ender books, I don't remember which it's in. Ender has a relationship with a computer in an earring on his ear, and he shuts it off. And I can't remember, shuts it off for a day or two or something like that. And the computer, it's like years to the computer. And when he comes back to her, it's this whole new life. It's this whole new relationship. And that was such an interesting take on sort of a male-female yin-yang relationship. What spawned that?
This is going to be embarrassing, but I'll just tell the truth. I had him switch Jane off, and then I forgot that I had him do that. And then in the next chapter, I was starting to write him talking to Jane again, and all of a sudden it hit me. he never turned her back on. But I always tell my writing students, and I do it myself, use your mistakes. So I could have gone back and had him switch Jane right back on again, but I thought, no, what would it be like for Jane if he switched her off like that, carelessly forgot to switch her back on, and stayed out of contact with her? And so I used it. And I thought it was very productive. I thought it was really interesting for them to break up, essentially. And so I always figure mistakes come from somewhere, and sometimes they're the most useful things I do.
So, top five stories that our listeners have got to read.
Of whose?
Of anyone.
Okay.
We know they're reading yours already because of this interview.
All right. So, not mine. You have to have read Lord of the Rings. You have to have read Jared Diamond's book, Guns, Germs, and Steel. You have to have read Steven Pinker's book, The Language Instinct. You have to have read Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen, because Pride and Prejudice is the best example of world creation you will ever find. Even though she was writing about her contemporary world, you don't have to have any professor explain it to you. You start reading that book and you are immersed in late 18th century, early 19th century English, middle class, upper middle class culture. And that's four. That'll do.
What's next? What else can we look forward to that's coming out in the future?
I'm working on the Advent Rising game right now. The Advent Rising novel. And we're working on the next two games, talking about that. Now, you got to realize, this is Donald Mustard's project, not mine. He's the genius behind Advent Rising. I'm just along for the ride. But we have a good time, and I have enormous respect for him. He's a first-class mind. We're going to be hearing about him. My guess is, by the time he's my age, he'll already have a couple of Oscars for movies he directed. I think that's where he's headed eventually. Also, I'm starting a science fiction magazine, science fiction fantasy online magazine. It's going to be called Orson Scott Card's Fantasy Book, very modestly titled. But every issue will have an Ender story. That's right. Well, I've written the first story already. It's called Mazer in Prison. It's about Mazer Rackham's voyage outward and back in order to keep him from aging while they needed him to command. And then the next issue, it's going to be a story about Dink Meeker in battle school before he meets Ender. So, you know, that will be there. Lots of stories by other writers. We're discovering new people. It'll be a quarterly magazine at first. We're going to charge $2.50. We hope that's cheap enough that people won't bother stealing it. Because, of course, you know, you're going to be able to hack the system, whatever, and be able to give away the password to other people. But, you know, for $2.50, make them buy their own darn entry point to the magazine. And so they're going to be illustrations. We're going to have columns. We're going to make it a full-fledged science fiction fantasy magazine.
That's really fantastic. And thank you so much for your time.
Well, that's our interview.
Interview, yes.
Lovely interview. We intended to talk about writing this time around, but instead we talked about preferences, about what we'd like to see in our entertainment.
Sorry, I'm bad.
But, well, you know, it's something that we approach when we write. So
yeah.
I think all four of us have different tactics when we write anyway, as far as doing it, actually physically doing the job, as far as planning the job, you know. There are all these how-to writing books out there, and no two of them that I've ever read agree on anything.
True.
Well, they agree on a few things.
Like, you need a pencil.
A few basics, like, if you want to write, write.
Well, you know? Like, there are acts to movies and, you know, things like that.
But that's mechanical stuff.
Right.
You know, as far as learning structure and stuff, if you want to learn how to write a movie, you got to learn what the structure of a movie is. If you want to learn how to write a book, you got to learn what the structure of any story is.
Real quickly, since so many geeks have hobbies, video games, board games, computer this, computer that, how do you guys get writing done with all the distractions? Do you have any tricks?
I have Peter.
Peter nags him?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm a big nag.
I actually work better with a partner. I found that holding down the full-time job has been putting a dent in things. But what you just got to do is just put down the video game, put down the book, and do the writing. That's all there is to it.
I have to specifically tell myself, I have to look at the clock and say, I'm now going to the office for 2 hours, and I have to close the door, and I have to write, and then I have to give myself this, like, a deadline or a...
That's what I was going to say. I work best if I have a deadline. Absolutely.
Really?
Oh,
but I also... Oh, yeah, I have to.
If I don't have some sort of pressure on me, then I'll take my time.
I hate deadlines.
Deadlines actually... Here's what's interesting.
They kill me.
Okay. The reason that you probably need a deadline is because you need that to make sure you sit down at the computer to write.
That is a factor.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, I don't have that problem in terms of sitting down at the computer. Like I used to, but I finally
got myself. Amazing. I mean, you sit down and you're just like.
If I can, I mean, ideally, if I can get, I mean, I tend to write with other people, so that sort of focuses me a little bit because
it's easier.
Well, because you have it gives you a schedule of, you know, every day I sit down. I'm supposed to meet a person at a certain time, sit down and start writing.
If you have to meet that person,
well, and also
at that
I find with structure, like I'm great with interaction scenes. I'm great with action scenes. Romantic scenes, my weak point. Mm-hmm. Not good
really?
At writing them.
I would not have
badly
thought
structured.
That.
I'm great with mushy melodramatic love scenes.
But
if I want a realistic love scene, not my strong point. I tend to rely on a partner for that.
I love you more than a lover could ever love a lover.
Lover.
But yeah.
I just know that geeks get real distracted with all their toys, and I have that problem, so I was just wondering.
Absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, I think the thing
like with this latest project I just finished, it was a 200-page project. I had to get down to 120 pages, and I had 1 week to do it in, you know, and add 2 new characters, change the sex of 1 character, and do all this other crap, you know. If I didn't have that 1 week deadline, it would have taken me forever. So if people are interested in actually hearing us talking about writing, getting ideas, getting the ideas structured, and then getting the ideas down, perhaps we'll cover that another time.
Yes. Yeah, sure.
Quickly, I want to do another topic so we can get back to our two-topic.
This
will be very short, but we haven't talked about video games in a long time,
except for,
I guess, about a half hour ago.
Yeah.
But
nice.
Video games that we've played.
So that's the other half of this?
This is the other half.
Okay.
Anyway, about Grand Theft Auto. Video games that we've played recently, I just wanted to get an update to see what you guys have played, what you've liked, what you didn't like, what you like about each game, whether you finished it or not. Have you guys been playing any video games?
Yep.
Don?
Old video games right now.
Yeah, me too.
What are you playing?
I finished God of War recently.
Cool.
I finished...
You gonna give it back to me?
Yeah, just like I already did when you passed it on to Peter.
I gave it back to you.
Oh, okay.
Never mind. I'm just going to be insulting Don today.
Not only am I a writer, not a writer, but I'm a thief.
Fucking thief non-writer.
It's fine. I'll just sit over here quietly by myself.
So God of War.
God of War.
You're weak.
And I'm weak.
Weak.
That's right.
Weak.
All fat people are weak.
Weak thief non-writer.
I played Katamari, which I borrowed from Aaron.
Oh, yeah.
Yay. Borrow from Aaron.
We just pillage Aaron's video games.
Aaron's the freaking library.
Because he's got so many games. I've got 5 games. Aaron has a closet full of games.
But mostly, when I come back home from playing my video game all day long, I'm not really in the mood to play video games. So what I have been playing most of all has been World of Warcraft. I got roped back into it with some people, and now I'm playing Horde on Garubashi server. Well, you don't call me when you're on.
You got his phone.
Hey, Don.
What am I going to do? Just happen to find out if you're playing or not?
I'm getting a...
No, call him.
Call him, and I'll get on. Nerdling.
I assume you're busy. I don't know these things.
Well, soon, because I'm going to be getting a new computer, and I'm also going to be getting World of Warcraft, we can have
the Geeks on Clan.
We will have a Geeks on Clan.
Absolutely.
So.
We'll get Skype so we can all talk. It's really cool.
Yes.
I have the headset. I just need to download
it. It is a much better life, actually. I was surprised at how much easier it is with the headset.
I believe it.
I was appalled.
Okay, so since World of Warcraft is one of the big games out there, and I bet you many of our players have played it, what are your race choices? Are you Alliance? Are you Horde? Are you what class do you like?
Well, I was in the alpha test, so I've played everything. And to date, my favorite is still... I still favor Alliance.
Have you played it since it went...
No, retail? I've been playing it recently.
Okay.
Yeah. My favorite still is Alliance. I think it's just because I'm a natural Pollyanna myself, and I just get really depressed when I'm hanging around in the undead world. Like, why is there no sunlight anywhere? You know, and
you
I played...
play the Torrens, man.
I do like the Torrens. I do.
They look cool.
Love the Torrens.
I dig them.
I've played... I have not played much at all. I've played the Undead, and I played a Dark Elf, or the Night Elf,
yeah,
or whatever they're called. And that's it. But I have a problem. I got World of Warcraft months ago for my birthday, installed in my computer, logged in, and it wouldn't run on my cheap-ass computer.
Mm-hmm.
So
got a new
I
computer.
Banned it. So I got a new computer, logged back on, but it said that I couldn't... that my login had already been used. So I went, huh, I guess I'll call in and try to get my old password back. And then 5 minutes later, it said, you're logged on. So I started a character, thinking that it had found my password. Started a character, started playing with Matt, got to like level 10.
Yep.
And then it said, your 10-day free trial is now over. Please enter a credit card number. I was like, oh, damn. So I tried to do that. And it said, your copy has already been registered to another user. So I called up finally and I said, listen, I told them the same story. And they said, well, yeah, we have your old account on file. And I went, all right, fine. Delete the old account and let me just continue on with this account. And they said, you can't do that. Once you've entered in the code that's on the box, it's linked to that first account and you cannot unlink it. So I had to delete the character.
Oh, so you lost your character.
My character's gone.
Actually, Aaron, that's good because we will all start together with a new character.
Yeah, we'll all start fresh. Yeah, but so, Don, you've been to 60, which means you know how to get to 20 like in a blink.
Yeah, it's so easy to get to 20. That's not a problem.
It took me freaking 3 days to get to 10.
I sneezed and I got my new undead priest up to 47.
Yeah.
So. Well, I guess I should play priest.
Okay, but those of you who are playing, perhaps we should discuss whether you want to play PvE or PvP.
PvP.
PvE is player versus environment, for those of you not in the know, which means you fight against the computer world.
Right.
PvP means player versus player, which means you have to fight against your enemy.
And action. The environment.
And I have to say, their PvP system is awful. It is absolutely awful. The whole new Battleground system is in. Didn't fix a damn thing.
You didn't like the Battlegrounds?
I haven't played it yet.
Oh, okay.
Because I can never seem to get in.
Oh, okay.
But
I love it.
There are still people who are just, you know, I'm level 60. I'm going to run around and kill everything that moves on the enemy faction.
Yeah.
Even though they don't stand a chance in hell against me.
Yep.
So there are people out there who intentionally play just to wreck other people's good times.
Yes.
And you find that on every server on both sides. And it's just, they need to put in a penalty system.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
and
not
a big, big penalty.
Well, they should make it so that you can't kill anybody under, like, you know,
there
five
are safe zones.
No, it's important that you can, that within the concept of the game, that when a level 60 shows up and you're a level 47, that
you and your buddies,
we're in trouble.
Yeah, run away.
But there needs to be a thing where level 60s are not just bored and bored for tears and, like, literally hanging outside.
As far as I can tell, level 60 has as much incentive to go out and kill second-level characters as they do level 59s.
Yeah.
They get the same bonus.
Well, but if you're in a battleground, if you're actually having a battle, I mean, in a real battle...
Battleground's something else.
Battlegrounds is great. Battlegrounds is like the game of Warcraft,
Capture
3.
The flag, right?
No.
It's like a Capture the Flag version of Warcraft?
There too. That is a version of it.
That is a version of it, but it's more like the Warcraft 3 game, actually, where it's like, these guys are going to, you know, your job as a level 20 is to go get these supplies.
Right.
Your job as a level 30 is to go and assault this base. Your job as a level 40 is to go and take out this one guy. Your job as a level 60 is to assassinate the leader.
That's cool.
You know?
That sounds cool.
So, yeah, Battlegrounds is cool, but it's failing in other areas.
Well, I have not been playing because of that snafu. So I have been playing. I got back onto Splinter Cell, trying to finish the last Splinter Cell game. Great freaking game.
Yeah, I played that. Yeah, I played the first one, Pandora, tomorrow.
That's the second one.
Second one?
The third one, Chaos Theory, is one I'm playing now. Great game. I was we're talking to Peter yesterday about they have these great, like, wow moments. They always have in the game where you'll, like, stumble upon a room and there'll be, like, a missile launch right in front of you and it's firing off in the distance and or, you know, you're going through the train sequence where you're going along underneath the train and even though you're actually not really playing the game, it's such a cool scene that you feel like you're, you know, it's an exciting, you know, part. I got Sid Meier's Pirates.
I have that. I've been playing it. On PC, though.
The problem is like it has this open world thing, but there's no motivation for me to keep going. So I'm like, eh.
There isn't enough variety in the game to keep me interested.
Yeah.
And
so
the fencing and dancing minigames are so repetitive that they wear thin on you very quickly.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a big problem. And, otherwise, it's just boats.
Trying to impress the governor's daughter by dancing with her should not be that much harder. Not as hard as it is in comparison to dueling the master swordsman.
Right.
All right. I can kill anyone in that game. I can't get the ugly daughter to smile at me at the dance.
Well,
I can't
Don,
do it.
Try harder.
I don't know. Sometimes I feel like killing somebody's easier than going out and trying to get somebody to dig you. Black Hawk Down, by the way, came out. It's the kind of Ghost Recon.
You got
slash
all the new games. What's with the new games, man?
Don't buy it. Okay. Bad, 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 mm-hmm. bad. Ghost, the new Ghost Recon 3 edition map pack, whatever mm-hmm. came out. You're gonna like this. 24 multiplayer maps, 24 modes of different play, including helicopter hunt, where you're running around the town and helicopters are everywhere, and everyone has to take them down. All sorts of really cool stuff. That is way better buy than Black Hawk Down. Don't buy Black Hawk Down.
I've been playing Oddworld, Stranger's Wrath.
Love game.
It is such an amazing game.
It was a good game.
Yeah, and it didn't sell very well either.
No. My girlfriend, who hates, capital H, hates video games, has been sitting and will, like, eat dinner watching me play. Is enamored of it.
Oddworld is kind of an old franchise, though. I mean, it's one of those ones that, unless they find a way to spice it up a little bit more, I don't think it's got much longer going for it.
I don't. Which is, the guy's closed down his shop.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah, he's not doing video games anymore.
It's really unfortunate, because I have to say, Oddworld is probably one of my favorite games ever.
It's very
creative. Mean the latest one?
The latest one. I thought it was so much fun.
Yeah.
And the story to it, I really thought was great.
It's great.
It's very creative.
Story.
It's a beautiful game.
I need to finish it.
The writing is clever. The dialogue, the voiceover action is great.
Really great.
But I feel like I've seen it.
Yeah.
I didn't feel that at all.
No. I've never felt that
you
way by an
odd. You haven't played the other ones, though, right? This is your first one?
No, it's the first one.
Right.
Yeah.
But this franchise has been on it for a while.
Yeah.
This is the fifth one?
Yeah, it's the fifth one. There's Abe's Adventure, Munch's Odyssey. I don't know.
Well, there's several Abe's Adventures.
Yeah, I can't find any of those.
So. For Mac?
No, they're all like.
They're probably not console games, are they?
No, you can get
like PlayStation
games.
Yeah, okay. There you go.
Munch one's
Xbox. Xbox.
That was the Xbox.
Yeah.
And that one's the worst one of them.
I liked it.
Yeah, really? But I thought that was the worst one of all of them.
Yeah,
too.
I'd agree, but I liked it.
Yeah. I played a couple games recently. I wasn't impressed with really any of them, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I played Advent Rising.
Mm-hmm.
That was I was really excited about that game. You know, cause especially because of the Orson card connection. It looks like it's got a great storyline.
I heard it's got an awesome storyline.
Yeah,
it's like a series that's coming out. There's like a three-parter.
Yeah,
right.
It looks like
we heard the music for it at the Video Game Live show at the Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah. Awesome music.
Oh, my God. The music was amazing.
And actually, the gameplay of it isn't bad either.
Right.
But it did have bugs.
Yeah.
And it crashed on me so often I had to stop playing.
Actual
crashes.
Well,
that's
see,
not good.
This was the problem that I had with it was I had so many bug issues I couldn't get past the first level, and the problem is each time you play their save thing is that you have to get to a certain checkpoint to save,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't get to that first checkpoint, so I had to keep on going through the game again and again and again.
I've heard that.
I just got bored because I played it like seven times. You know. It might just be the first level that's buggy.
Mm-hmm. No, the reviews were for such a great collection of things about the game that it's sad that it just wasn't working.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I actually looked at the reviews with that. And I even read a review that said once you get to a certain point in the game is so awesome, it's worth all the bugs that you go through it. So it's really, you know, I mean, I...
How far you're willing to just drive yourself insane on
to
the
get
first
there.
Levels.
Because they're like, once you're dancing through the bullets, you know, I mean... So I played that, and I played that for about 2 hours, 3 hours before I was
and
like...
And could not get past the first level.
Couldn't get past the first
See,
level.
That's dumb.
That's
maybe
bad.
It's probably more like 2 hours.
The first level should always be easily...
First level well, should be like a again, half hour. Come on.
The first and last level should always be easy.
It was, that was not the issue. The issue was not... The gameplay. The gameplay was fine. The issue was that it would crash and I had to start over from the beginning. And then it would crash and I'd start over from the beginning. And I did that about four times and there were some music issues
I've
I was running
I've never heard of a console game with consistent crashes being an issue. That's awful.
Well, okay. Now, let me just
Matrix
throw out...
Matrix game was like that.
Speaking of which, I still want...
I didn't have any problems with the Matrix game.
Okay.
I had no crash problems with it that way.
Oh,
but
your father's video game, too.
It could have just been me or maybe I had a scratch CD for the first one.
Right.
And then the second one when I played, because I had more problems with the first CD that I used. But the second time I played, it crashed again like twice and I just gave up. You know? So maybe I just had a very unfortunate incident or maybe I was doing something.
Hmm. I've heard the reviews. I've heard that it has crashing
it's
problems.
It's buggy.
If anyone's played the game, I would love to hear from you guys and find out if I should give it another try.
Yeah, write us.
Because I'm actually,
us.
You know, It looks like it's a great game. I played Pariah.
Oh, how is that? I wanted to like that. And they have a map maker.
Yeah, it's not that exciting.
Oh, bummer.
It's okay. The fun part of it is they've got the sniper rifle's a lot of fun in the game. The problem with the game is that there's really only like three types of enemies you fight. They're all humanoid. Mm. They look almost exactly the same. I mean, they've got like, you know, different.
That was the kill zone problem.
Yeah, and you run through the map, you get bored. Yeah. You're like, give me like, you know, something different. You know?
Yeah.
And the storyline is, you know, not that interesting at all.
My other game was Chess Master. I actually picked up Chess Master because I love chess and I had gone off of my internet chess club. I'm a geek, sorry. And
if I find a used copy, I'll buy it.
No, I bought it. Oh, if you find a used copy. Yeah, sure. And I've been playing, and I'll sit online, and I'll just leave it on and go eat and come back.
Wait for somebody.
Nobody ever gets on there. Ever.
Call me up. We'll play Battle Chess online.
Oh. Okay.
Where's Battle Chess? You mean it's a PC game?
Yeah, PC game.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
I loved Battle Chess.
Yeah.
Last game I'm playing is Blood Rain 2. It's actually not that bad. It's not that bad. It really isn't. It's
quick story about Blood Rain
2.
Yeah,
tell me.
I went to E3 last year,
yeah,
right, when they were showing off Blood Rain 2.
The model.
Oh, no.
The model.
Well, she was fine.
She was very pretty. So I went around back, and they had some consoles set up, and I'm sitting there playing it, right? And then one of the guys who I think was, like, maybe head of the company, someone trying to do some sort of outreach thing to me, walks up behind me and goes, like, "You like the game, huh?" I'm like, "Seems fine. What do you like about it?" I'm like, "Well, actually, the controls are a little sticky. The movement's a little sluggish. You won't do quite what I want to do. Looks like you're trying a little too hard with the acrobatics. Graphics aren't quite what I was hoping they'd be." And I sort of, because, you know, he asked my opinion. I'm giving him my opinion. He goes, "Oh, but she's pretty hot, huh?"
Yeah,
and he started pointing out all of her attributes, and I'm like, okay, I'm really done right this.
Yeah, way. That's one of the things that they definitely play up the sexuality in this game.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, she like straddles women and sucks their blood.
Yeah, whenever
out.
She sucks blood from someone, it's a very sexual thing. She's straddling them, sucking their blood, and you know, you hear these slurping sounds. But actually, the fun of it is actually the fatalities that you do, how you kill things.
Yeah.
Because she's got some really bloody, fun, violent things that she does where she cuts off people's legs and they go hopping away trying to get away from you. And she'll pick up someone and stab them in with one of her blades, and then she'll rotate them. Like, so they're rotating around the blade. And then she'll put out her other blade and she'll just chop off their limbs. So it's like as they go around. It's kind of fun, you know.
Sounds like an adult-only game to me.
Mark of Cree, that's all I've got to say. That was the game.
There's a sequel that came out, right?
Is it out yet?
It's out, yeah.
I've been waiting for it.
Oh, maybe it's not out yet.
Oh, I gotta get
Mark
it.
Mark of Cree 2?
Yeah.
Maybe it's not out yet.
They call it something else, but it's...
Yeah, it's called something else.
You can play his younger sister. You can play a chick now, Don.
I want to play.
Yeah. Mark of Cree was just so much fun because, one, it was a character who was Don.
I would rather play the big Polynesian guy. I mean, if I can play my... Like, I Matt knows I like to play the chicks. Yeah. But if I could play myself, that's even better.
Yeah. I mean, he Don never gets to play the big Polynesian guy.
Come on, how many Polynesian guys have you seen in any video game?
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. Mark of Cree was just, I adored that game, so. Yeah.
All right, let's wrap this show up.
Cool, man.
We got some mail.
Anyone? Some viewer mail.
We got some foreign stuff.
Foreign? Forum?
Forum.
I got a couple links.
Cool. One, we didn't know who the hell Strong Bad was, and so Evil Wayne just went, "Hey, guys, go to Homestar Runner," which when I went to, I went, "Oh, yeah
Homestar."
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so, thanks, Wayne. We remember now. Then we got a Geeks On email inquiry, and somebody was interested in who I was. The only thing that is really me is Matthew Yang King. That's who I am on IMDb. It's not a screw-up. If you want to look me up, that's where I am.
But there's another...
There's a Matt King who's a supermodel and who's actually at my agency. And he's 6'4 and blonde and stupendously gorgeous.
And he also is credited for Warcraft 3.
He gets credited for other things. We also get sent out on oppositional auditions for each other. So, like, I got sent out on a Schlitz beer commercial, and I showed up, and it was me and a bunch of 6'4 blonde-haired, blue-eyed guys. And, you know, me as this little 5'8 Asian guy walking in going, which one of these is not like the other? Yeah, not cool. Okay, we have this. We have a request. Mm-hmm. So, now, it's whether or not to out the request. I think it's important. So,
we've had someone who requested a gift idea for a geek friend.
Gift idea for geek friends.
Gift idea. So, Chris.
I sent her a rockin' idea.
Chris, if you're out there and you're listening and your girlfriend's name is Pamela, walk away from the podcast.
Back slowly away from the podcast.
For about 3 minutes.
Oh,
maybe
come on.
Two.
You can't. You shouldn't have. All right.
All right. Walk away. All right. You away? All right. Good. Okay. So here's what Pamela said.
Chris. Wait.
Walk
I
away.
I see you.
Come on.
Walk away.
Man.
Chris, this is
it's
really.
It's not cool.
It's not
funny,
cool. Man. All right, good.
It's like opening up the presents and then rewrapping them on Christmas, okay?
Out.
No.
Now, first of all, this geek has a girlfriend, and she wants to give him a gift. So why not?
Well, we thought...
That's it.
Yeah.
He's got a girlfriend. Case closed.
There you go. I actually already sent her a gift idea, which we will not discuss here because it's super cool and I don't want to ruin it.
Okay.
Because
so, Chris is still listening.
Chris is still listening.
Asshole. Man. Whatever.
Jerk.
But now she says he's a huge Batman, Green Lantern, and Starman fan. He is a geek. But she doesn't know he's a collection. He has a collection. Well enough. So, you know, she's got to check.
I would stay away from the collection because there's no way you can...
Yeah. But she says he's an all-around nerd who enjoys Us, the SETI podcast, Science Friday, Off the Radar magazines, Mythbusters, RPGs, Buffy, actually the redhead on it, and he's knee-deep in anime and generally loves all things that can easily become obsessions. He sounds like Igor from Dork Tower.
Dork Tower.
Yes. So her usual gifts are games and action figures and stuff like that, but she's looking for advice. So what do you think? Pete came up with a great idea. You thought World of Warcraft, right?
World of Warcraft.
Although
great.
You might lose him.
You might lose him.
You might never see him ever again.
Yeah, World of Warcraft, if he plays video games, likes those type of things.
I'm always, you know, a fan of dressing up like the anime girl and just showing up in the room, and that, you know, it's pretty good.
Best if accompanied with a trampoline.
Yes.
Yeah, no, this is a great gift. Find out what his favorite anime girl is, and then go to that cosplay place, you know, online, get that outfit, show up in the bedroom, and he'll be very happy.
He'll be exceedingly happy.
Better yet, get your friend, and both of you dress up. And
he'll be twice as happy. Four times as happy.
Yes. Four times as happy.
Just so you understand.
Wait a minute. If he gets a threesome, he won't be a geek anymore. Well, that just cuts him out of it.
Yeah,
he's like, have to throw away all of its anime.
Right,
do
exactly.
You know how many geeks go to those Ren fairs and camp out?
That's true.
But we should explain to her. That it's the exponential law of for every girl you bring to bed, it's exponential. So if it's you and another girl, it's four times as happy. If it's you and another girl and another girl,
it's eight times happy.
Right.
Or 16.
I didn't know there was math involved.
16.
So it'd be 16.
Yeah.
So. 16 times as happy.
All right. Do we have another
suggestion I would make? Just something that would be fun. There are portrait artists you can find online who will do portraits of different people, anime style. And if you like, want to spend like $20 or $30, I'm sure you could do them to do a real,
actually
full, you know, full notch portrait anime style of your
not
boyfriend.
Only that, I'll put this link on the internet. There is a guy who will make action figures based
off of you as
your superhero.
Oh,
so
that's a great gift.
You tell him all your interests and everything and what he does and then he'll construct an action figure as a superhero based off that.
That's your gift, Rachel. You're getting him an action figure. All right, and also this was the week that Matt got schooled because I guess I was putting out misinformation like left and right.
Oh. Geeks On would like to apologize for all information put forward by Matt Yang King.
Exactly. So now the Oregon Vortex, I got schooled on because the guy was like, no.
I told you when you were saying that.
I want to go there. I want to see. I want to see for myself. I want to see for myself.
The Oregon Vortex.
Come on, man. Even though they're selling it.
There's supposed to be an exact
Every
one.
Every time you
in
say
the...
that, I'm hearing the Oregon Vortex.
Yes.
Which just is something else entirely.
Yes. Twisty penis.
There's supposed to be one in California,
Sorry,
too.
Sorry,
There's supposed to be a
family-friendly show. We promised Flash.
Yeah, that's true. And then finally,
We're
from
friendly.
our female geek minority, we got a little heads up on the George R. R. Martin thing, because you had mentioned it, and then I had mentioned it about...
You mentioned it!
Don had mentioned that the book was going to be released in 2006, so Don is the one...
That's Don, spelled MattYangKing.
Damn.
Don.
Damn it.
We apologize on behalf of MattsWrong.com.
Yeah, exactly. The book has been split, is what it is. Is they were initially thinking of releasing it in 2006 because it's going to be a huge novel and he's not done with the end. So the book is now going to be split, and half is going to be released this year in November, and the other half will be as A Feast for Crows, and another half will be released in 2006.
Jesus.
Yes.
And I have to reread the goddamn series because it's been so long.
Yeah.
Oi.
Oi.
Well, one thing that we'd like to start dipping in on occasionally...
The forums.
Would be the forums. And I'll always try and bring at least one of the interesting threads over here. Something I should probably notice right now, a new post was put up by Jack B., who posted his own geek news stories. So if you guys have interesting geek news stories, put them up on the post. I'm sure everyone would love to see them.
Yeah.
Or email us and we'll investigate and bring it up on
Geek
News. It helps us out because we troll around, try to find geek news, but this is all...
I'd be curious if people out there can figure out which posts we go to in order to get
our
news.
Oh, they've already figured it out. Let's read the post. They've caught on.
Yeah, we've been undiscovered. But this time around, I just thought I'd bring in Will's... I only have the name Will.
No.
Will made a new line called the Forgotten Series line, where he brought up a whole bunch of his favorite series that nobody remembers anymore,
right.
Nobody talks about. So some of the ones that he put out there were The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr., Alien Nation.
That was a bad show. I'm sorry.
Actually, I liked that show.
Briscoe?
No.
Alien Nation was a good show.
Yeah, I liked Alien Nation, too.
Briscoe County Jr. actually has quite the little cult following.
It had charm, but it was bad.
He put Sequest DSV up there, and I suppose I can forgive you for that.
I like the dolphin.
It's Howard from the Illuminatus trilogy.
He put Lex up there, which Sci-Fi Channel carried religiously for 2 seasons.
I like her cleavage.
And he also put Crusade. Now,
like
I'm the Babylon 5 fan here of the group. And on behalf of all Babylon 5 people, I would like to apologize to the world at large who had to watch Crusade. I'm not quite sure what they were thinking when they did that, but... there were a couple good individual performances on there, but I can't figure out what they were thinking. We also had Jim Foreman suggesting Good versus Evil, for those of
That's
you
cool.
who remember that
First,
series.
First big appearance of Jolene Blaylock in a series.
Oh, she was in that?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And Evil Wayne, our eternal friend, brings up War of the Worlds, the series, which was one of the first series that launched the Fox Network.
Yeah, I remember
when.
That.
Right.
And I loved that series.
Right.
Yeah.
That was after they got the disease and they were still meandering.
Yes. Yeah. They were able to
take over,
grab a human and put themselves physically inside the human, like wear their skin around.
Yeah.
But as long as they were doing it, the skin started decaying.
Yeah.
So they could only carry it off for a day or two before the body started dying on them. It was a good series.
Interesting.
A couple other ones I wanted to throw out for people, our ads. One is Brimstone. You can still see Brimstone on the Sci-Fi Channel once in a while. It was a very good series, had a great premise. The lead was a little weak, but the... what's the name of the father from Smallville? Lex Luthor's father?
I don't know. Is that
Lex Luthor's father from Smallville stars in that show as the devil, and he is amazing.
Hmm. Well, he's a great actor. He's a fantastic actor.
I would also throw out Miracles, which was canceled by ABC after 4 episodes, but it was a great series. If you can find
Was that the
them.
One that was like...
Twilight
Ulrich
Zone.
And Angus
McFadden. What was the blood was written and it written... It was like God is coming or... what?
Yeah, there are all these messages throughout the show saying...
But they can be read
two ways. God is... now here.
Right.
And then the big revelation is that he wasn't the only one who'd seen that message, but he was the only one who saw that message that way.
Right.
Everyone else read, God is nowhere.
Right.
And that was like the big hook for the series.
Oh. Cool.
A sitcom from the late 70s called Wizards and Warriors.
Oh my
starring
God.
Starring Jeff Conaway and Julia Duffy.
That was appalling.
Oh, but for camp value, can't be passed up.
Appalling.
You can occasionally find a VHS tape of it at various
Willing
conventions.
To put a knife in my eye for that one.
And here's the one that I'm sure everyone here will remember, Voyagers.
Oh, yeah, poor guy killed himself.
Yeah, but by accident.
Brom Bones or whatever.
It was the story about the kid who finds a pocket watch that, when pressed, will travel them through time to a place where time was going wrong.
And then they fall out of a hole in the sky and fall down.
It's like sliders.
He and his friend had to set time right so that the clock would let them move on to the next place.
Fantastic show. Lead actor had everything going for him. You know, he was this big, hunky model dude, and he was playing around on set and had a stunt pistol with a blank loaded into it, and he put it up to his head going, ha ha, look! When you put a blank up to your head, it's still
a bullet.
A bullet, you know. It's not a bullet because it doesn't have a cap on it.
It's still an explosion.
It's still an explosion, right? And so he basically blew his brains out.
Oh,
man.
Yep.
So do you guys have any other forgotten series you'd like to?
Well, they mentioned Nowhere Man, which I've talked to you guys about. It's that
great song.
Great. Yeah, I
remember
always,
the show.
Yeah, it was the photography one that we
it was the one conspiracy theories on. Like it opened UPN.
Oh, one of those APN things. Okay.
That was one I had.
What was the one that was in black and white with the guy who only saw things that were color that were important about his past history? It was like Jack 2.0 or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was Jack 2.0. Yeah.
Well, what was that one about, like, he was like, it was also on UPN. He was like a superhuman, like, animal guy, and he could, like...
Manimal?
He was like Manimal.
Yikes.
Predator. Oh, anyway.
I'd also throw out Friday the 13th.
The series, yeah.
Which was a guilty pleasure for a long time.
I was all
and that chick was kind of hot.
Yeah.
Roby, I think her name was.
Yeah, she was kind of hot.
She was cute.
Actually, what was the series? Was it Friday the 13th where they have to find the cursed artifacts?
Was
that Friday the 13th?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And each artifact they get, they have to it
shove it back in the attic and that's it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I refused to watch the series for the longest time because I thought it was a series about Friday the 13th movies.
You know? I actually really enjoyed it, too. Yeah.
The redhead on there was hot.
Okay, actually, can I mention something that's actually current that I'm watching that's really neat?
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys seen Over There?
I just started... I'm watching it. I'm waiting for it to get going. Like, the first episode was just a firefight to me.
Yeah, well, I mean...
The second episode was definitely more intriguing, and I'm really hoping it starts getting into it. You know, not more I can say is besides that it has potential, and I haven't seen it yet.
Aaron says it has potential. Aaron hates everything.
Yes.
Okay. I like it. So, Aaron says
but you
it has
like
potential.
Everything.
I do. Like, I like everything. Pete's in between.
What network is it on? And
it's on the FX channel, actually.
Yeah.
And FX is kicking in.
Those guys are going for it.
It's really interesting.
And when is it on?
Oh, I believe it's Wednesday nights, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm sure you can search for it on the internet.
The only thing I watch now is Battlestar Galactica, so it's nice to have something else to look forward to.
To close out, we have a letter that we wanted to read.
I actually have some links afterwards. But
okay, fantastic. We have links as well. But we just wanted to bring in our Demon Lord friend who would love to answer your questions and you know, deal with your problems on the show when you have them.
It was a Dear Demon Lord letter.
Okay.
Here's the letter.
Dear Demon Lord, I met this girl the other day at a club, and she's really hot. I got her number and called her, but she didn't call me back. I would really like to meet her. What should I do? Aching in Atlanta.
Dear Aching, I would recommend casting a spell from Yagthros's Guide to Demonic Love, Enslavement, and Dating Etiquette. First, gather the ingredients that you will need. Find the blood of a Maltese dog. Then, steal a hair from a hairbrush. Make sure you use dead hair, not plucked. I made that mistake once, and I'm still watching ectoplasm out of my fur. Anyway, also make sure that you get the right hair upstairs, if you know what I mean. Add the crystallized salt from the Dead Sea and echinacea, and mix thoroughly. If you don't have salt, Mrs. Dash works just as well. Burn in a brazier while chanting spell from book, and she will be your naughty little succulent succubi in no time flat. And if that doesn't work, try flowers or a private investigator.
Geeks On does not endorse black magic, animal cruelty, echinacea, or anything said, expressed, written, suggested, or implied by the geeks of Geeks On.
Excellent. Do we have any geek links. Week before the extra, extra long episode that we said we wouldn't do anymore?
Well, they love it.
I lied.
I saw this. There's a conference not too long ago, DEF CON, which is a hackers conference.
Oh.
Yep.
DEF CON.
No one attends. They just sign in.
Yeah. Well, one of the contests that they have there is called Spot the Fed.
Yeah.
Okay. And basically the content – I'm reading from the website. Basically the content goes like this. If you see some shady MIB Men in Black type, earphone, penny loafers, sunglass-wearing Clint Eastwood to live and die in L.A. type lurking around, point him out. Just get my attention and claim out loud that you think you have spotted a Fed. The people around at the time and will then, I bet, start to discuss the possibility of whether or not a real Fed has been spotted. Once enough people have decided that a Fed has been spotted, the identified Fed has had and the identified Fed has had a say, an informal vote takes place, and if enough people think that it's a true Fed or a Fed wannabe or an other nefarious style character, you will win an I spotted the Fed t-shirt. If the and the Fed gets an I am the Fed shirt. Also, if feds want a shirt, they can just come to him and ask for it. He'll trade the shirts for, you know, sort of Fed type of coffee mugs, things like that, whatever organization they're with. I thought that was really cute.
That's great.
There's another thing I heard about. I just thought this was an interesting thing. It's thefatmanwalking.com.
What?
Thefatmanwalking.com. It's a guy about a guy named
around with a camera.
Guy named Steve Vaught, who you know, just put on a ton of weight, and he decided that what he was going to do is he was going to walk across the country.
Oh yeah, I heard about this.
From California to New York. Woo. So he's in Arizona right now, and if you go to thefatmanwalking.com, you can see basically what's going on with him and how it's going.
So he has like a blog or some type of update that it, as he's going.
Yeah, you can see where he is. You know, you can every day you can go and link and find out how far he's made it.
And now is he trying to stay fat, or is he trying to lose weight, or does it have nothing to do
with?
I
think he's doing it for health reasons.
Yeah,
he wants to lose weight.
Yeah,
cool.
He's taking the southern route to burn off more.
Damn,
you know. And I have a link to the best Flash game ever. It's basically a Flash game version of Bully, what you're talking about. Except you play a little purple guy with a Jason-like ski mask, and you beat the crap out of kids on the playground.
Nice.
And you have to deal with other bullies who come after you, and, like, a kid in a helmet who runs at you and charges and tries to headbutt you, and you can pick them up and throw them down, and you can punch, like, fighting game. It's as good as Double Dragon 2 was back in the day.
Oh, fun.
It's hilarious.
Well, excellent. Well, sorry about the length of this episode, but with the interview and everything, and us getting in arguments about adult
unexpected
warnings.
Unexpected arguments.
Really?
It did run long, but break it into chunks, watch it, listen to it in a couple days. So anyway, I hope you all have a good geek week.
Have a great geek week, kids.
Rock it out. Be well.
Bye.
Bye.